Today is June 7th, 2017, and this is episode number 414 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm packed, and I'm headed your way. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note, ACM@macobserver.com.
That was a really excellent pew-pew-pew that you did.
I did. It was a terrible. We've been around the master of pew-pews, and that would be Melissa.
Melissa's pew-pew cannot be topped. Mm-mm.
No, sadly, no. And I'm going to apologize to everybody. I've got neighbors who are apparently rebuild. I think what they're doing is they're replacing their paint with individual Tic Tacs that are being hammered into the wall. So it's been going on for days. Don't know what's going on. If you hear hammering, I apologize.
And I just thought that they were getting some serious dubstep going on.
I might find that a little bit less annoying, to be honest.
You know, and if we'd started recording 5 minutes earlier, in addition to having your dubstep Tic Tac paint neighbors, we would have had the hotel cleaning crew, because
that's true. Yes,
even though they've already been in and cleaned my room today, they showed up to clean my room.
Well, you know, better than the opposite problem.
So true.
All right, so here we are. It's WWDC week. It has been a pretty balls to the wall nonstop week so far.
Holy crap! That is so true. It's you know it's bad when we're trying to squeeze our recording time in between everything else that's going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is true. And here's a fun fact, folks. We didn't actually discuss topics.
Well, based on most of our shows, I'm assuming people think that's the case every week.
Fortunately, we have a target-rich environment. We, of course, have maybe going deep into some of the WWDC stuff. We could also talk about, and we probably should talk about, since we didn't talk about it on TDO, John Gruber's talk show live last night.
Yeah. With
Craig Federighi and Phil Schiller.
That was a great event. I'm so glad we all got to go see that. You may be saying but I'm saying it was a great event because we got to hear some things that Apple has done.
We got a little bit of color. It was I think that John Gruber's gotten to be a really good host for this sort of thing. He's a good speaker. Mm-hmm. He's really grown into that role. Last year we got a lot of insight.
It would have been nice to have more of that this year. I agree.
We very specifically got insight on Apple's approach to AI and how they were taking a long game approach to AI and trying to do it right. Now, that was clearly also what Apple wanted to talk about last year.
Mm-hmm.
But it was useful. It was extremely useful. It was interesting. It was entertaining. It was informative. I don't expect Mr. Gruber to ask really tough questions at this sort of thing. I mean, A, that's not really what he does, and B,
he wants to have him back next year.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm okay with that fanboy rehash of the keynote. But what I would love, because you know, John has a really good insight on things like privacy and what Apple is doing with AR. And I would really like to have seen him explore privacy in particular, like what Apple is doing, like all the steps that are some of the steps that Apple is having to go through to really protect our privacy. And I guess we did get a little bit of tiny amounts of that, but I would have liked more. And I also, man, I would love it if he would have said, you know, Tim Cook has been telling us that privacy is going to be a competitive feature at some point in the future. And like, when is that going to happen? You know, that would have been a great conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. That would have been a great conversation. Nonetheless, I found it fascinating to watch Phil Schiller and Craig Federighi's body language with each other.
Yes.
It was worth going just to see that.
Oh no, it was definitely good. I get
what you're saying, where you'd have liked to have seen some more in-depth discussion about things when John got Craig Federighi talking about APFS and the really fast rollout to the
mm-hmm.
Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that they'd actually been testing this whole process a lot earlier than people knew, and that they had been rolling us all into APFS on our iOS devices since 10.1. So we'd get a software update, it would update us to APFS, check and make sure everything looked right, and then roll us back to the previous file system on our iOS devices, and we never knew, and our data was okay.
Yeah, Apple was doing that to be able to make sure that they were able to do that transition properly.
Right, and when I heard that, I was equally shocked and delighted while terrified.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I had no idea that my file system on my iPhone and iPad was being switched out completely and then put back. And, you know, and in the end, it doesn't matter because it worked. But holy crap.
That's ballsy.
Yeah, it is. And so hearing that, now I get why they were comfortable moving aggressively with APFS on the Mac. And that's why it's going to be the default format for the Mac this fall when macOS High Sierra comes out.
Right. That's true. And we also got some interesting insight. Wait, I think there's something else we should probably say about the APFS thing. Craig Federighi called the file system team the best in the world.
You know, based on what they've accomplished, that doesn't really feel like hyperbole right now.
It really doesn't. And he said that they've been working on it for 2.5 years, and that if you look at what everybody else on the planet has done, file system migrations have been a 10-year process.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Apple, you know, Apple is this is one of those things that Apple does so well, so quietly, that they end up not getting any credit for it.
Yeah. And it's pretty amazing. And while there are people out there that bag on Apple on a regular basis and say they're not competent, they can't accomplish anything, what they don't see are these things that are happening under the hood and behind the scenes that we shouldn't have to see. And if we did, it's because there's a big problem. So there's a lot going on that people don't know about. Apple is pretty busy all the time. They're not just kind of floundering around
I would say that there in Steve's big thing was that final, like, I know sometimes it's called the final 5%, but really I think it's like the final 0.5% a lot of times with him.
Mm-hmm.
Where he would focus on that stuff, and it seems to me that Apple is still able to do a lot of that. Maybe not like Steve did, because Steve was Steve,
right?
And no one else is Steve, and no one else is going to be Steve. But certainly with a lot of the fine details that Apple does still seem capable of focusing on this stuff and making it right. Like one of my favorite things, Jeff,
mm-hmm.
that was from Talk Show Live was Phil Schiller talking about how our Mac and iOS devices and our watchOS devices are all talking with each other when you say something like, "Hey Siri."
Yeah, that was amazing to hear what they're doing. And for those of you that weren't there, didn't have a chance to listen in, all your iOS devices are listening for your specific voice for Hey Siri. And instead of getting deluged with devices trying to respond, they all in milliseconds talk to each other, figure out which device is most likely to be the one that you're talking to, and then that's the one that responds to you.
Yeah, they vote. Voting. And like, you know, one device is saying, well, you know, and I'm completely putting words in their mouth, but this is what I took away from it. One device is saying, well, hey, he was just using me 45 seconds ago. And another device is saying, oh, yeah, well, he was using me 20 seconds ago. So that device would say, so, you know, he's talking to me.
And then another device will be saying, yeah, but I'm right beside him on the desk.
And then they'll all vote. It's like, yeah, yeah, the Mac's right because he's right there and he's working. He's right there by the desk. So, yeah, he's right. So that's super interesting.
Yeah, it was fascinating. Yeah, I'm really glad that we had a chance to go to that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure. It was interesting. It was also there was a fun anecdote from Craig Federighi.
His Siri anecdote or his Siri
one? Yeah, the Siri one was what I was thinking of.
Oh, fill me in. Tell me about that. I'd love to hear that anecdote, Brian.
You're such a good straight man.
Thanks.
He said that he was referring to the new Siri voices that were rolled out as part of, or that are being rolled out as part of iOS 11, which mm-hmm. is only at the developer beta stage right now. He said that he was in his car with a friend of his who was an Apple employee, but he's not a quote unquote disclosed employee, meaning he's not an employee who is signed off for getting Apple's, you know, top secret products.
Right.
And they're in Craig's car and they're driving along and Craig has iOS 11 in beta on his device and an incoming text message, or was it a caller text message? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
An incoming message of some sort, some kind of notification comes on and this new and improved Siri voice says, you know, announces the notification and his friend goes, "Hey, wow, that sounds really good." And then to hear Craig describe it, he's like, "Oh, really? Oh, I didn't even notice anything. Must be
my speakers." Yeah.
Because you know, Apple's executives are also held accountable for Apple secrecy.
Right.
Do you remember enough about the 120 hertz scrolling anecdote? That was fun.
The 120 hertz scrolling thing. Okay, so they were talking about how they had been seeing it, and like no one could resist just flicking on the screen just to scroll stuff because of how smoothly it moved, and it was like an obsession for people. And at one point, before this was something that even other executive staff had access to, Phil Schiller was working with an iPad that had the faster 120 hertz refresh rate. And he was in a meeting, and he's doing something on his iPad, and Craig is sitting close enough that he can see Phil's iPad, and he was able to tell that it was different. And he kept trying to look over and get a better look at what Phil was doing. And Phil's trying to act like it's nothing out of the norm because no one else had been cleared for that yet. So even in their own executive meetings, there were still people at one point that hadn't been cleared to see the amazing smooth 120 hertz refresh.
Yeah. And they also decided, and they talked about how when they rigged up the 120 hertz megahertz hurts scrolling. Mm-hmm. They had to rig it up. So they had to get a display that would do it. And then they had to hook it up to a Mac, I think, to like a GPU on the Mac or something along mm-hmm. those lines. And then they were testing. It's like, oh my goodness, this is so, you know, buttery smooth. I think that was the word they kept using in the keynote.
Yep.
You know, we've totally got to do this. And so then once they decided to do it, they then had to go out and like, go talk to the silicon team, the guys and girls that are designing their chips, mm-hmm. and get them to be able to make the chip. And so, you know, that sort of stuff was definitely interesting. Those were some of the highlights for me. So some of those little bitty insights like that were some of the highlights for the talk with me. And I believe you can watch it or you can listen to it both.
And yeah, I don't know if the video version is available yet, but yes, watch and listen.
Yeah, definitely, definitely good stuff.
Yeah.
Alrighty, definitely good stuff. We have, there's that whole WWDC. Actually, did you see Kelly's writing a story for us right now as we speak?
Oh, she is? Tell me, Brian, what's that story?
Apple is opening HomeKit to non-commercial, no license required use.
So non-commercial, no license required. Am I correct in assuming that means for people that just want to put together their own stuff as opposed to a company that's making a HomeKit ready product?
That is correct. Although I don't know legally, I don't know what the exact legal definition of non-commercial is right now. But, you know, it's possible that you could actually release something on, say, GitHub.
Yeah, all right. I could see that.
For anybody to do, because you're not selling it. And we think it might no longer require a HomeKit chip, but I'm not sure about that. So we're researching that. But this is Apple significantly opening this up.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. As it stands right now, people that want to do what this allows them to do has been a thing where you need to have some tech chops to go along with it, because you have to set up something like Homebridge.
And well, you also have to get an MFI license.
No, I mean, if you're doing this at home,
like, right. But you would have had to have been using something that had an MFI license.
No, you haven't done this yet. So you don't know the craziness stuff that those of us that are trying to get weird products into HomeKit can do. So like what I did, I installed Homebridge on a Raspberry Pi. And then that becomes a bridge between non-HomeKit devices and my HomeKit network. And there's no MFI certification. There's no MFI chips. It's a piece of software running on a tiny little Linux box that's just broadcasting devices as if they were HomeKit.
I see.
And so this is why I'm really excited about what Apple's doing now, because that means it's probably going to be a lot easier to start bridging other devices into HomeKit. Less command line work for a lot of people. That's a very cool thing.
Yeah, that is a cool thing. And it's, you know, especially for those people who are doing the, you know, DIY smart homes, this is super important. And it could lead to some more innovation in the space, and it could lead to, it could actually lead to more commercial products as more people are fiddling with it.
Yeah. That would be awesome. This feels to me like I'll call it a gateway feature. Give people a way to easily get in and work with HomeKit. And then when they figure out, oh, I've got this great thing, then they can commercialize it and get their MFI certification and everything else. But in the meantime, they can just do their own thing and it's a safe bet. I'm going to be finding new things that I'm going to jam into my HomeKit network, not because I need to, but because I can. Once I do it, then I'll real. Yeah, I know. Yeah, but once I do it, it will quickly change from, well, I actually did need to do that. This is a disease, Brian.
It's true. It's a good disease, though.
Oh yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's I have to tell you, since we're on HomeKit, I'm going down a little bit of a rabbit hole for just a minute. While I was sitting here working on an article this morning, I got a HomeKit alert for motion in my place. Now, mm-hmm. I'm in San Jose right now for WWDC and AltConf, not in Boulder. So I wasn't in my place. The motion wasn't me. And it was actually the maintenance people. They had to come in and take care of a couple things. And I knew they would be doing that. But because I have all this HomeKit stuff linked together, I got an alert when they opened the door. I knew when they had walked down the hall. The HomeKit compatible camera that I'm playing with right now from D-Link, it kicked on and started recording the guy. And so I sat here and watched on my iPhone in real time what they were checking out in my place while I'm sitting here in San Jose. It was pretty awesome.
Good times. Good times. They do anything they shouldn't have?
Yeah, they left the bathroom light on.
Mm. Did they fiddle with things they shouldn't have?
Nope.
That's good.
Yeah, it's really good because I would have been on the phone saying, okay, so he's in this room right now and we have a real problem.
Did you have them turn off the bathroom light?
No, I have someone else that's going to go take care of it later. I wasn't sure at first because of the way the sunlight was coming into the room.
Yeah.
So that's all right. I have my Boulder crew. They're going to swing by and take care of it for me.
Well, good times, bad times. You know, I've had my share.
So I've heard.
A woman left home with a brown-eyed man. I still don't seem to care.
So people, this is what happens when Brian and I are horribly sleep deprived.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
I get excited about tracking someone going through my apartment and Brian starts rattling off classic rock lyrics.
As one does. All right. Well, so now we need to, pick another thing we can dive deep on.
I think we should talk about the iMac Pro.
Yeah, you know, it's funny enough that that's actually exactly what I had in my head.
Oh, well, there you go. So here's why I wanted to go into this now. Mm-hmm. It's because you've been uptight about Apple's product releases over the past year or so. You've mm-hmm. been pretty uptight about Apple's Pro desktop line.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we've seen the iMac Pro, which we know is coming later this year, but we've actually seen the thing now.
Yeah.
Or prototype.
We didn't know that iMac Pro existed. We knew the Mac Pro existed.
Right. But we knew iMac Pro was coming.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, we did.
We knew iMacs were coming.
No, we knew iMac Pro was coming. No, Phil Schiller told us a couple months ago.
He told us that a Mac Pro was coming.
He said a Mac Pro is coming next year, as soon as next year. And he also said that an iMac with features for professional users was coming this year. That would be the iMac Pro.
Hmm. Okay, I don't quite remember that, but let's make that. Let's just say that you're right.
Okay, because I am. So yeah, we'll go ahead and say that.
Except for he didn't say as soon as next year. He said it'll be at least next year.
Yes, that's true.
Mostly pedantic.
Yeah. Well, I know for you, it's the little victories. I'm still right about the iMac Pro being announced ahead of WWDC.
And we're going to go with that. So from a feature standpoint, so we got a question from Michael Goff on Twitter. What did he ask me? Got to get this right. No. Michael Ehrman asked, do you think Apple will do a Mac Pro next year? No. Yes, we do know. Sorry, I'm still not on the right question. So yeah, we do know that the Mac Pro is still coming.
Yes, the Mac Pro is still coming.
And then John, oh goodness, where's my question?
Top men.
Top, totally top. Maybe it was someone on the TMO account.
Well, you know, anyways, I would help you look, but I don't have a big screen in front of me today.
The spirit of the question is, do you have a problem with this being closed? Oh, I know. I know. This is Rick Allen. Rick Allen asked me this privately.
Oh, okay.
He asked if I had a problem with iMac Pro being not, you know, like still like having stuff soldered and, you know, not being accessible to like readily upgrade everything. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a problem because Mac Pro is coming.
All right, I'll accept that.
So I will have a problem if Mac Pro is as locked down as the trash can Mac Pro.
I will be stunned if it is.
I agree. I don't think it will be. There is that subset of pro users who need the power and performance of the new iMac Pro. You know, the thing will do, I think it's 6, 10, or 18 cores. Does that sound right?
Is it 6 or 8 at the base level? I don't remember, but yes.
It was 6, 10, or 18, but
yeah, it's definitely 10 and 18 for mid and high end.
Okay, I'm almost positive that it's 6 on the low end. Okay,
awesome, 6.
There are people who need the performance that that thing is going to come with who still don't need a tower or a standalone modular device, if that's what we get.
Yeah.
And they're not worried about fiddling with it, and they're not worried about changing out components. There's a subset of the people for whom that is perfect. And what I think it was Phil Schiller said during the talk show live last night was that while they have projections on how many people are going to want such a device, they won't really know until they ship it, obviously.
Right. Yeah, of course.
So I don't have a problem with the iMac Pro being mostly locked down.
Yeah, I know there's people that are flipping out over this and they think it's ridiculous and Apple doesn't know what they're doing. I'm okay with it too, because we're still talking about an iMac. We're talking about a machine that's designed to be just encapsulated and easy to set up and get going. And
yeah, it's an all-in-one.
Yeah. It's there are so many people out there that what they need in their professional environment is a computer they can pull out of the box, turn on, and start working with. And that's exactly what this does. It gives you pro-level power, and all you have to do is plug it in and turn it on.
Yeah, plenty of ports, which is, you know, a fun novelty for an Apple computer these days. But plenty of ports, or at least what seems like it'll be plenty of ports. You're going to be able to run external GPUs.
Right. That's something that I'm really interested in trying now that Apple has official support.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, I think the iMac, and it looks great, according to those who have seen it. They say this, but that space gray just, you know,
looks as sexy as you think it does.
Yeah, that's what I'm told by people I trust on these things. So I'm stoked about this device. I can't afford one, but I would buy it in a heartbeat. I would replace my iMac 5K with an iMac Pro. At least the 6. You know, I'd love the 10. Well, I'd love the 18, but I don't need that.
18 cores, 128 gigs of RAM.
And I'd like 64 gigs of RAM, and I wish I had more than 4 cores. I have 4 cores right now and 24 gigs of RAM. I run out of RAM all the time, and I can peg my processors. And that happens frequently. So I don't need 18. I don't think I need 128, but I would definitely like 64.
Yeah, that'd be really nice.
That's going to be a $7,000-$8,000 machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I won't be getting one.
Right. But, you know, it's I know there's some people that look at these prices and they think, holy crap, Apple's charging way too much. Well, there's a difference between buying a consumer-level computer, whether it's an iMac or anything else, and buying a computer that's designed for professionals. And they just cost more because of what they're putting into these machines.
Yeah, the processors and the GPUs in particular are more expensive. The larger capacity SSDs are more expensive. Larger amounts of RAM are more expensive. I mean, those things are just plain more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
No way around it.
Yeah. And it just costs more. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, in particular, the GPUs and the CPUs.
Yeah. But man, that looks like a great machine. If I had the money and I didn't need to have a powerhouse laptop at my disposal all the time, that's the computer I'd want to get. That iMac Pro is just awesome.
But the question, so like one of the things, there's an interesting thing, a couple of interesting things. Tim Cook made the point of saying that Macintosh is the heart and soul of Apple. Let's quote, heart and soul of Apple.
That's a pretty big statement.
It's a pretty big statement. It's designed to reassure developers. It was designed to reassure the hardcore fans that have been frustrated with the state of the Mac platform for the last few years. Phil Schiller said, anyone who had doubts about our commitment to the Mac should put them away. He said that during Talk Show Live last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not willing to put those doubts away. I am positive and comfortable with the idea that Apple is committed to the Mac in so much as it needs Macs to do its other jobs.
Yep. Okay.
Right. Yep. So I am still comfortable with that. We've made that point a few times. I'm still comfortable with that. However, Apple has gone years now giving the Mac product line benign neglect. We just saw a major step towards fixing that 3 days ago, or 2 days. I guess it technically was it 2 days ago?
Let's see. This is Wednesday. So, yes, 2 days ago. It was on Monday.
50 hours ago or so. We saw Apple make a major step to correct this. Apple released new MacBook Pros a mere 10 months after they were released.
Mm-hmm.
It's me. I'm so excited about that. We saw a long overdue tiny processor upgrade to MacBook Air.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping they'd go Retina with the MacBook Air this time around. I didn't expect that they would, but I was kind of hoping because I thought that would be cool.
I think that report that says that Apple is like 65% ready to kill. No, those were the glasses that Apple was 65% going to kill.
Right.
But the report coming out of Foxconn employees was that MacBook Air is going to be discontinued. They may have got it wrong, but you know, still not seeing any kind of real development on MacBook Air. It probably is destined for the dustbin.
You know, one thing I haven't had time to look at is this very specific chipset that Apple's using in the MacBook Air. Was it updated because Apple wanted to update it? Or is it like, remember years ago when Apple quietly did a processor upgrade on the Cheese Grater Mac Pro? And it was because the processor that they were using had been discontinued and kind of had to do it.
Apple stopped selling it. Intel stopped selling it. Yeah, that is possible. I would even say at this point it was likely. One way or another, we got a little tiny upgrade there. We got these MacBook Pros that are updated. We got new iMacs that were way overdue. And we had the announcement of the not yet shipping iMac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
All those are great things. All these are all great things for the Mac platform. But we need to see the next step and the next step after that for me to truly put my concerns to bed. Like Phil Schiller said, I have all the evidence I need to do so now. we need that Mac Pro to come out. But then, but in addition to the Mac Pro coming out, we need the next iterative update on MacBook Air. And we need the next iterative update on iMac. Does it take them 2 more years to upgrade the iMacs that were just announced? That's still a problem.
Yeah. I'm hoping we're not looking at a 2 year upgrade cycle.
Likewise, because it's just nonsense. So, but I mean, so we saw all the right things at the keynote, and Phil Schiller said all the right things, except for the fact that I do not believe we have all of the evidence we need yet to fully believe that Apple realized its mistake in taking too long to upgrade these products. They're going to have follow-up steps that they need to take for me to be fully confident that everything is back in happy land.
Well, I'm feeling pretty good about where they are right now. And I'm betting that we'll see upgrade cycles that are more appropriate. I don't think we're going to have breakneck upgrade cycles, you know, like every 8 months everything gets refreshed.
Yeah, we're not going back to the glory days of 9 month refresh cycles. And or even 10 month refresh cycles, but I would take 12 month, you know, or even 11 to 13 month. I would take that, but
I'd be okay with it even being a little bit longer. But considering where they've been, and as quickly as the market is changing, if we're hitting 24 months, then I'll be getting a little worried.
You know, I really don't even want 13 months. I want 12 months or less. I would take 11 to 13 compared to what we just got, but I don't want it. I want 12 months or less.
All right, hold on. I'm going to send a note over to Tim for you right now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Much appreciated.
Yeah. So, but still, I'm pretty pleased with what we're seeing. I'm not upset that my Touch Bar MacBook Pro that I got late last year has already been replaced. I know some people get really touchy when their computer gets replaced with a newer model.
I ain't got no truck with that, man.
Yeah,
you buy what you need to buy.
Yeah, that's the advice that I gave people when I was a consultant all those years ago. It's what I live by. I bought as much computer as I could when I needed it. And the next time I need to do that, same thing. I'll buy as much computers as I need when I need to get it.
Yeah, with the exception of the fact that I don't want to buy 2, 3, 4 year old technology. You know, there's a caveat there that we're not contradicting what we've just been saying.
Oh, no, no.
But in terms of your product, the product that you bought 4 months ago being upgraded today, get over it. It's going to happen sometimes. And, you know, as long as you made a good buy when you got it, that's what counts.
Right. And if you keep holding off because, you know, the next thing is coming, you're never going to get the equipment that you need. And
especially the last few years.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But, you know, and then the flip side of that, back when Apple was on a regular 9 month cycle, for years, it was 9 months, every 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything, if the products were refreshed every 9 months, and it was pretty easy. Don't buy in that last 3 months.
Yeah, and I see that as a problem, because if everyone knows the cycle, then you hit one quarter where sales tank because no one's going to buy stuff.
Not our problem.
Yeah,
and some people do buy stuff.
Some people do buy stuff, but your overall sales will slump. Not our problem; it's Apple's problem. And I think that they figured out how to deal with that. Don't do an upgrade cycle that is so consistent that everyone knows when to stop buying.
Fair enough. But yeah. Okay. I was going to go down a deep, dark rabbit hole again, but I don't think there's.
But you're not on a hunt for parsnips, are you?
Mm-mm. Not right now.
All right. Well, then what else from the keynote do you want to talk about?
There's HomePod. There's iPad Pro.
Mm-hmm.
iOS 11 and High Sierra Fully Baked. LOL.
I have to say, when they announced High Sierra, macOS High Sierra, I thought they were joking, and then were going to tell us the actual name. And then it turns out, no, that really is it. And then later on in the keynote, they introduce HomePod, and the lilt or the tone in Phil Schiller's voice to me said he was having a hard time delivering the joke. And then it turns out, no, that's not a joke. That's actually the name. And because of the delivery, it took me a little while before I was okay accepting the name.
Huh.
So anyhow, they rolled out two names that at first I thought were jokes.
Fair enough.
So
I'm pretty interested. I and we kind of touched on this on TDO, but it's interesting to me that Apple has so emphasized music with HomePod. Apple's going to reinvent home music, right?
Right.
And and that's what they're going to do with HomePod. They're going to reinvent home music. And, oh, yeah, by the way, it has, you know, smart home assistant abilities, too. You can, you know, you can get, you can ask it everything. You can ask Siri, whatever. We're going to reinvent home music. This is a home music device. Home music, home music, home music, HomePod, home music.
Dave totally nailed it. His piece last week where he hypothesized that HomePod, at the time we thought it was called Siri Speaker, but HomePod was more of a Sonos competitor than an Amazon Echo competitor. And it turns out he nailed it. That's exactly what this is.
Yeah. Dave absolutely nailed it, but it is definitely more than that.
It is
a competitor for Amazon's Alexa platform, at least within a certain within a certain range, because without the cheap device, the dot to put in the rooms where you don't care about having the $350 speaker. I think Apple is making it, with what we know today, I think Apple is making it harder to use HomePod to control your entire home.
Yeah, I'll accept that.
I want to see that the $75 dot competitor.
It's going to be a while before you see that.
Yeah, if we ever do. And we may never.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're more likely to see a pair of smaller, less capable or less intelligent satellite speakers that have enough of a brain so that they can do the sound acoustic tuning with the bigger speakers, so you can have a surround sound system or a couple of satellite speakers in the same room to fill out the sound even more.
Yeah, maybe. I'm pretty iffy on satellite speakers for HomePod. I'm not even pretty iffy. I don't think Apple's doing that. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're counting on being able to use their beamforming and other directional aspects of HomePod to make you not want to bother with that.
That's very possible. If you're buying two of these things, which would cost you, $350 a piece?
Yeah, $700.
So $700 for a set, then based on what we know today, you should have a really impressive stereo audio system in your home. And that's pretty cool. But I think what you were saying, Brian, about Apple being so focused on Apple Music, I think that they lost sight of how consumers are going to be using this, in a broader sense. So you should be able to have one or two of these and have your Apple TV just recognize them, and it pairs up, and now you've created your home theater system, and it's just done.
Yeah, well, yeah, like Sonos. That's true. But you know, I do want. All right. One of the things I love about HomePod is this: it's listening to you. But because Apple has put this A8 processor, you know, someone on Facebook, by the way, said that $350 was way too much for HomePod.
No, what they meant was they don't want to pay $350 for a HomePod.
Well, that's
different.
That's more accurate. I don't think it's what they meant. What they meant is it's way too expensive. And I just think they're wrong. $350 for what you're getting is actually a bargain, assuming you want what you're getting.
True. And there are a lot of people that will arbitrarily set a price point on what they would pay for a product without really understanding what the product is.
Yeah, and they'll compare it to Race to the Bottom crap.
Right.
Yeah. And I ain't got no truck with that either.
Yeah, looking at the price of an Amazon Echo, I think they're going for $149 now instead of $179. But I can't remember for certain. But regardless, under $200. And so if you're comparing an Amazon Echo feature and price to a HomePod, then you're making the wrong comparison.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. So, but here's one of the things I love about it. Apple has put an A8 processor that is powerful enough for HomePod to listen and then to decide when something is going to be sent to Apple's cloud servers. So what you're invoking HomePod is decided locally. And when you're recording, nothing that you say is being sent to Apple until you invoke HomePod, but with Hey Siri.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, it's sent to Apple servers, encrypted, and attached to an anonymous Siri ID, not attached to you.
I just love that.
Yeah, it makes this device not a home wiretap.
Yeah, and Apple has designed it so that they can't be pressured into giving up information because they don't have it. Like, literally, they don't have it.
Right, and that means that it can't be stolen either.
Yeah, I really like that.
Right, it's not just this device being used by the government to surveil you. It's also information being stolen by hackers or whomever, or let alone, of course, Apple selling that information, which Apple does not do. So I love HomePod. I want to make my home controlled by HomePod, but I don't want to stick a $350 speaker in every room. Some of those rooms just need something like the Dot.
Well, that may come. I'm not going to hold my breath for it, but it could come. If Apple does release a smaller device that doesn't have all the speakers and it costs substantially less, it'll be something that comes in a few years. Because Apple will probably do what they typically do, where they hit the high end when they feel like they've essentially saturated their potential sales at that level, then they release something that has fewer features, costs less, and now they go for that market. And if you want to see this as a long-term example, look at the iPod. That's exactly what they did there. So they could do the same sort of thing here, but I'm questioning if they would do that at all.
Yeah, I am questioning that too. But I wish that wasn't the case. Oh, you know what would be, you know, would work. What would work is if Apple allowed third party devices to fill that particular niche and communicate with the HomePod.
Oh, that would be interesting.
That would work.
Yeah, like
for me personally,
like they're not actually handling any of their processing. They're just either sending your commands back to the HomePod, right? Well, that, and then giving you the basic responses that get streamed back to it.
But it doesn't really seem like Apple would do that either.
No. But I totally get why you'd be excited about that.
But the only reason I'd be excited about it is because I want this. And if Apple's not going to do it, I'd take a third party solution. But I don't think Apple's going to allow. I wonder if you could do something really clever where you put devices that pipe the sound. So like I could walk into a bedroom and say, "Hey Siri," and that would pipe the sound to the HomePod.
Well, you could.
No, it's not going to happen.
No, I mean, what you would end up having to do is build this whole thing where you're going to scratch build a system. That's how that would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So you got to get to AltConf. You're doing another interview, right?
Yes. I'm going to give everyone a little teaser. As soon as we're done recording, I'm heading back over to AltConf, and I am interviewing one of the Worldwide Developer Conference scholarship winners.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's getting to talk with this person already. It's going to be a fun conversation. So that's going to be a video interview that will be up on the site soon.
Awesome. That's great. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Can't wait. All right. Well, I will let you get to that, and I will see you later this evening.
All right. Well, then it's probably about time for me to hit a little bumper button right here. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Dubstep Tic Tac is my Prince cover band name.